हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहद्वैत गदाधर शिव सनि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So Prabhupada commenting on the worship of the demigods. Aspirations for material enjoyment by endeavoring persons are condemned. Such aspirations are something like the intoxication of the degraded human society. Intelligent persons should try to avoid these aspirations and seek instead the permanent life by returning home back to Godhead. Because otherwise, these temporary things, you make the endeavor, but the problem is you only get the temporary result. Right? That's the difficulty. Is that one is making an endeavor to get a result, that's not the problem. The point is why endeavor for a temporary one when for the same endeavor you can get a permanent? Right? That's the idea. One desiring spiritual advancement and knowledge should worship Lord Vishnu or his devotees. One desirous of protecting his family line and thus advancing his dynasty should worship demigods like the Pitas and others and planets celebrated for their piety. One who wished to rule his kingdom or empire nicely should worship the Manus. One who desires victory over an enemy should worship the demons. And one who desires sense gratification should worship the moon. But one who desires nothing of material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, persons of broader intelligence know this well. Though one be full of material desire or without any material desire, or whether he desires liberation, by all means the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead, is to be worshipped. Right? So here it is mentioned, however, persons of broader intelligence, they understand that no matter what you want, worship the Lord. Right? Here we've been given that if you want all these material things, you worship these particular demigods, and you may get these results. But in fact, if you actually want these things, the real person to worship is the Supreme Lord, because he's the one that sanctions it anyway. You worship the demigod can't give until Paramatma sanctions it. Right? And so and Paramatma is only the partial representation of the Lord. So now if you worship him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then that's better. Right? That's complete. So broad-minded, that's the only way to go about it. So actually, if we're thinking that there's other processes, that's because our vision isn't broad enough. Yes?
If you worship a demon for victory over an enemy, or you worship Krishna for victim over an enemy, is that, will the result be the same?
Result will be, yes, at least the same, if not better, if you worship Krishna. It's not that it's going to be better by worshiping demigod. The point is whatever you want is given by the Lord anyway.
Yes.
So if you're approaching him just for material desire, then that's what you'll get. If you want pure devotional service, then he may or may not fulfill that desire, or he'll fulfill it in such a way that you lose the desire. Right? Because the idea is to go back to Godhead, not to stay here.
So the tangible result might be different, even though it's better still.
The tangible result, the point is for a materialist to worship the Supreme Lord for material benefit, then he'll get his material benefit.
Okay.
You know, he'll do better than the demigods. Right. But the point is as a devotee, then you may or may not get, you know, whatever's going to be beneficial for your developing pure devotion.
Yes.
Is that
yes?
We pray to Lord and Shiva for protection.
Right.
We can get that same from Arjun Krishna.
Yes, but the point is Nrisimhadeva is Krishna. He's not a demigod. So it's still Krishna. It's just that when Krishna protects the devotees, he protects them as Nrisimhadeva. So that's not a difference.
So it's the mood we're worshipping.
The mood?
When we choose Nrisimhadeva in certain situation compared to Radha Madhava or Panchatattva, it's the mood that Krishna is in that manifestation.
Yes, but see, is the distinction should be made between Krishna and anything else, not between Vishnu Tattva and other aspects of Vishnu Tattva. You understand what's happening here? Is now, because here is that we'll say, okay, we shouldn't worship Nrisimhadeva, we should only worship Krishna. But at the same time, I'm going to go home and I'm going to look up that new, whatever it is, systems management or some other success, you know, things like that, and I'm going to get my benefit from that. But all it is we're looking at worshipping the powers of the Lord without even going to a demigod. So that's even getting worse. You know? I'm using it for Krishna, yes. But the point is where does the power of systems come from? Where does the power of, you know, all these success things come from? They come from Krishna. You understand? This is what is being talked about. I have my own idea, my own plan. I'll look it up on the internet. I'll work it out. I know what's going on. But the point is, you know, so then we're worshipping, you know, the WWW demigod. Right? You know, what does this mean? You understand? So, point is, between Vishnu Tattva, you don't have a problem. The problem is between Vishnu Tattva and what's not Vishnu Tattva. But that's where the problem comes in. See how we tend to switch it? Oh, you can't do that. You can't worship Krishna. I mean, Nrisimhadeva, because Krishna, this and that. Or, you can worship anybody. It means these things we kind of go a little bit, we're not discriminating in. Right? Because we make this whole exactness here. But at the same time, then where it actually is to be applied, that's where it's missed. Right? Like that. Just because we're so used to doing it that way. That's all. That's just the way people do things. So therefore, we don't think anything of it. But worshipping Krishna, worshipping Nrisimha, that's new. So that, therefore, we can focus on that and make this distinction. But just going about and I have my own plan, how I work out my life, you know, it means that's already worshipping the demons.
Yes.
Because that's what demons do. It's that my plan is what's going to make it work. Rather than I'm serving the Lord, you know, by His grace, then we will work out something that will have an effect. Yes.
We're used to working with WWW.
Yes.
Is that just because we don't have access to this culture, which would say, approach this person instead?
Not really, because factually, it's only the last few years that it's become really prominent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go back 10 years, you know, who had computers? Who had smartphones? Who had iPads? You know what I'm saying? Somebody who had a lot of money had... But otherwise, no one else had. They all had a Nokia, you know, like that. Not that there's a problem with Nokia. You know, we like the Finns, but you know, we're just saying here is that we weren't into this kind of thing. It's new, right? So the point is that's been 10 years. Devotees' contact with this culture has been the last 40 to 50 years. Why is it one soaks in and it's just part of life, and the other one hasn't? That's because one requires the modes of passion and ignorance, and the other requires the mode of goodness. That's where the problem comes in. Is that make sense? Yeah. Because otherwise, it's that, you know, a lot of the world functions without the internet, amazingly. You know what I'm saying? There's grandmas in Italy that still make their ravioli without an internet. They don't have to look it up on the internet, you know, how to make the dough, you know, what's the sauce, you know, where to get the ingredients. They just go out in the backyard, pick the ingredients, and that, you know, the other stuff's in a bottle or, you know, like that, and then they make it.
They've still got a memory.
Yeah, they still got a they got their own memory rather than having to depend upon this other memory. Yeah.
Their phone is not smart. They are.
Yeah, they are. Plus, you know, they probably have rams out in the backyard. Like that. Otherwise, how do you make your halloumi, right? Yes.
So, Maharaj, intelligence is based on knowledge.
Intelligence is based on knowledge. You could say it's the functions of knowledge. You know, because we mentioned that the intelligence means knowledge has these subdivisions. So the organ used is the intelligence, right? Intelligence is a mechanism to do this. So there's five subheadings of knowledge. You have intelligence, gratefulness, power of understanding the circumstantial environments of place, object, and time, perfect knowledge of everything, and knowledge of the self. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:16:28. It's amazing. I thought for the last 10 years I was in the second canto. That's why I couldn't find it.
Good thing you had the phone.
Exactly. Smartphone. Set their memory, right? You know. So this is a branch of knowledge. Yeah. Yeah. It's got memory. Yeah. But the difference is, it's never had a memory. Right? Now I have a memory. Okay, so these are these fine points that we're looking at. Because the difficulty comes up is obvious things we catch, and then we you know, maintain that by creating an identity out of it. You know, but the point is that's not how it actually is successful. Because the modes are always changing, so unless you can adjust something, change something, it doesn't, you know, it's just like you have, it's very rare, let's say, that you have something that it has, it makes something, and then it's always like that, and people appreciate that, right? You know, they make it like in Delhi, you have the old jalebi wala, right? That's what it's called. It's a market. It's about twice the size of this place I'm sitting on.
Okay.
They've been making the same kind of jalebi for as long as anybody can remember. That's all they make. I think at one time of the day they make some samosas. Some people want some salty with their jalebis. But that's all they make. One kind of jalebi, nothing else. You know, so here and there you have some places that make one thing. But it's not that you go to them forever. When you want, then you go to them. Right? But most make a variety. You know, that's how it can it can function. So the difficulty comes up is that if you identify with a certain material phenomena, then the problem comes as the environment changes. Then you're not part of that scene anymore, because it mentions one of the elements of intelligence, it means knowledge, is time, place, and circumstance. So people talk time, place, and circumstance, but they're talking it from 20 years ago. You know what I'm saying? How many people are, generally those who are dealing in the moment don't talk time, place, and circumstance and doing it. Other people who talk about it are the ones that don't do it. They say, oh, it's time, place, and circumstance simply means it's different from how I'd like to apply it. But that's your application. Whether you use Vedic or modern, what does that got to matter? You got to apply it to the time, place, and circumstance. It's being taken that modern means time, place, and circumstance. But who in the modern is doing that? Who's getting the effect? Right? I think on the that I know of, I'm not sure, maybe someone can say, that on the stock market, I'm not sure, but I think it's about 7% make profit.
Profit.
One of the biggest investors says he defined the stock market as a gradual movement of money from 90% of the people to 10% of the people.
Yes. And gradual is just so you keep the 90%. Otherwise, they could do it like this and take all the money, but then it won't keep going because people will freak out.
Yeah.
Okay. So we said, those are the guys. That's 10%.
Mm.
You know? So most people, how many people own their own house? Own their own car? How many, they own their own house, actually own it. How many are paying a mortgage? How many have money put away? They have a retirement. They can do like fall back on it. How many people have these things? We talk about it. Who has it? So that's the point, is the modern doesn't mean automatically success. But we deal with it as if it's just, because that's how they talk about it. The advertisements like that, scientists talk like that, academics talk like that, celebrities always talk like that. You know, until the next day something comes out in the tabloids and completely ruins their reputation. Then they don't talk like that anymore. You know, but you understand? So the point is there's a difference between time, place, and circumstance and what you use to apply it to that. Because whatever you apply, if you apply time, place, and circumstance, it will work. Right? Because the point is time, place, and circumstance is a natural law. You follow it, it works. You don't follow it, it doesn't work. Whether you are coming from a Vedic mentality, a modern mentality, you know, a tribal mentality, it doesn't matter. It will work. Does that make sense? It's laws. So laws function. So what he's pointing out here is, therefore, since these laws are coming from the lawmaker, you go to the lawmaker, then you'll be successful. Right? If you go to the prime minister, you can get done what you can get by going to any other minister. And instead of running around to 10 ministers, you just go to one. Right? Yeah. And because you've recognized that one, you actually start to get purified. So then you get elevated. Right? So the conclusion of, I shouldn't be going to Krishna for my material desires, is not, therefore, I will just do mundane things and not bother Krishna. No, it should be, if I shouldn't go to Krishna for material desires, give up the material desires. Is that,
yes.
You know, otherwise, you don't have a choice. That's the, you know, does that make sense? That's the ease, let's say, of the urban life over the rural life. You know, or small town, right? Small town, everybody knows everything you do. You sneezed, everybody knows, right? You know, like that. You sneeze, and then, you know, some grandmother shows up at the door with a cup of hot tea. You know, I heard you sneeze, but I did that 20 minutes ago down at the mall. Yeah, how did you know here?
Everybody knows.
Yeah, everybody knows. The whole town knows. You know, so in the urban, then nobody knows, so it seems better. So if you deal with Krishna, then you know somebody knows. Well, if you just deal on your own, there's always the illusion that nobody knows. Like that. So. Right, so he's pointing out, therefore, those who are broad with broader intelligence know this well. There is no other system. So one should therefore surrender to the Lord. Having explained in the previous chapters renunciation and seeing everything in connection with the universal form, jnana, meditation on the supersoul, yoga, and how demigod worship karma, and now demigod worship karma, in verse 10, Srila Sukadeva Goswami recommends bhakti as the perfect process of self-realization. Bhakti is the ultimate goal of karma, jnana, and yoga, and the success of all other paths depend on the presence of bhakti in them. Right? So the paths themselves, seeming different from bhakti, their success is only because bhakti is connected with them. So therefore, you could either use it with the flavor of karma, jnana, or yoga, or go back to its natural state of bhakti, which includes karma, jnana, and yoga. The difference is the flavor. Right? Does that make sense? So that's it. It's just a difference in flavor. It's already included. On the other hand, bhakti is independent and does not require any help for its own success because it already includes the others. It's not that it requires jnana or yoga to make it successful. It already is independent. It contains its own. Because karma, jnana, yoga, these are techniques. Right? But a technique requires power. Where does the power come from? Right? The power comes from the Lord. It's not coming from somewhere else. So that's the point. It's independent. Because it is non-different from the Lord. It is one to the Lord's power. Well, these others are techniques, so we think, I have to use this technique to get. No, you have to have the power. It's just like I say, I have to blend something, I must use the blender. But if we don't plug it in, right? Does the blender work on its own? No, it works by plugging it in. So that means, and the electricity exists without the blender. But the blender doesn't exist without the electricity. I say, it's not a blender. But electricity is electricity, whether it's connected to a blender or not. So bhakti is independent. It can be connected to any of these processes. In fact, the only process for spiritual advancement is bhakti yoga, although the processes are merely progressions towards the destination of bhakti. Yoga actually means bhakti yoga. From the beginning of karma yoga to the end of bhakti yoga is a long way to self-realization. The yogi who is progressive is therefore on the true path of eternal good fortune. One who sticks to the particular point and does not make further progress is called by that particular name. Right? Karma yogi, jnana yogi, or dhyana yogi, raja yogi, hatha yogi. Because right? He sticks to a particular point. It's not progressive. Like, it's just like if someone travels and they go through, let's say, you know, Las Vegas. You know, you're not part of Las Vegas. But if you take up residence there, then you're from there. Right? So, if you go through these elements, you have yama, you have niyama, you have asana, you have all these elements. But if you're moving through them, you're just seeing, okay, am I doing what I should do? Am I avoiding what I shouldn't do? Right? Am I situating myself properly? Is my energies properly engaged? Right? Is my attention, am I focused? Right? Then you're just moving through these. But if you stick to it and just are you stuck at asana, then you're called a hatha yogi. Right? If you're stuck at pranayama, you're called a raja yogi. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. If you're stuck on just knowledge, then you're a jnana yogi. You're stuck just on endeavors, activities, pious activities, you're a karma yogi. But a bhakti yogi, it's whatever is necessary at the time you use because bhakti is the prominent. It's not dependent upon the other ones. You use the other ones. You know what I'm saying? One can say, oh, but you're using, therefore. But the point is the cook can cook with a nice pan or with a tin can. Right? Or if you don't have anything, he'll have a menu for just cooking it directly on the fire. You know, Sanatana Goswami would cook his chapati dough on the fire. You know, you just make the bone, roll it into balls, and throw it in the coals. Right? It works. So, the whole point is it's independent. These things just are tools. But for what we're talking here is it's an identity. You have to make a distinction between tools and identity. Right? One person is skiing, he's using all the paraphernalia, it's just fun. Someone else identifies as a skier. There's a great difference between them.
Yes.
Right? Because the one person, when they leave, then they're not that. The other person still dresses like he's at a ski resort.
Yeah.
You know?
That's why small children have more fun playing.
Small children have more, yeah, because they're just moving through it. Yeah, no, it's actually a fact. It's interesting watching the little kids play and the big kids play. Because the little kids, whatever anybody does, it's fun. But the big boys take it very seriously and get very upset if it doesn't go according to plan. You know. And if you really can play according to plan, then they'll pay you money.
Yes, big money.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, then it's called a job, right? It's not fun anymore. It's not fun anymore. If one is fortunate enough to come to the point of bhakti yoga, it's to understood that he has surpassed all other yogas. Bhagavad Gita 6:47 purport. So surpassed means he's come to that realization. Right? He's now functioning on the topmost platform. Another is that he's already done all those. And now having done all those, now because they're not going to give that full satisfaction, now coming in contact with bhakti, taking that up, now they've gone beyond. They cross beyond this.
Yeah, makes sense.
So the person who takes up bhakti yoga means all these other yogas have been done. Mm. And they don't give the satisfaction being looked for. Because they're not independent. But bhakti is independent. Srila Prabhupada explains the nature of bhakti yoga in his purport to verse 10. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is described in the Bhagavad Gita as Purushottama, or the Supreme Personality. Right? So that's to separate between Paramatma and Purushottama. Right? So you have Brahman, Paramatma, and Purushottama. Mm-hmm. It is he only who can award liberation to the impersonalist by absorbing such aspirants in the Brahma Jyotir. The bodily rays of the Lord. The Brahma Jyotir is not separate from the Lord, as glowing sun ray is not independent of the sun disk. Therefore, one who desires to merge into the supreme, impersonal Brahma Jyotir must also worship the Lord by Bhakti Yoga, as recommended here in the Bhagavatam. Bhakti Yoga is especially stressed here as the means of all perfection. In the previous chapters, it has been stated that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of both Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. And in the same way, in this chapter, it is emphatically declared that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of the different varieties of worship of the different demigods. Bhakti Yoga, thus, being the supreme means of self-realization, is recommended here. Everyone must therefore seriously take up the methods of Bhakti Yoga, even though one aspires for material enjoyment or liberation from material bondage. That's fine. Means if that's one's inspiration for being involved in Bhakti Yoga, then fine. But you'll get much more out of Bhakti Yoga if what you want is what Bhakti Yoga can offer. A kama is one who has no material desire. A living being, naturally being the part and parcel of the Supreme Whole, Purusham Purnam, has as his natural function to serve the Supreme Being. Just as the parts and parcels of the body, or the limbs of the body, are naturally meant to serve the complete body. Desireless means, therefore, not to be inert like the stone, but to be conscious of one's actual position and thus desire satisfaction only from the Supreme Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this desirelessness as Bhajaniya Parama Purusham Shuka Matra Sva Sukhatvam. In his Sandarbha, okay. This means that one should feel happy only by experiencing the happiness of the Supreme Lord. This intuition of the living being is sometimes manifested even during the conditioned stage of a living being in the material world. And such intuition is expressed in the manner of altruism, philanthropy, socialism, communism, etc. by the undeveloped minds of less intelligent persons. In the mundane field, such an outlook of doing good to others in the form of society, community, family, country, humanity is a partial manifestation of the same original feeling in which a pure living entity feels happiness by the happiness of the Supreme Lord. Right? Such superb feelings were exhibited by the damsels of Brajabhumi for the happiness of the Lord. The gopis loved the Lord without any return, and this is the perfect exhibition of akama spirit. Right? So we're taking this full rage. So if you have material desire, that, you know, means for yourself in this case, right? Or, so that's obvious. Or you don't have material desire. That means from the one who wants to do good to others up to one who wants to please the Supreme Lord. Right? And then the one who wants liberation is those who want to get out of the material world, or even devotees who are worried about getting out of the material world. Yeah. Right? Or devotees who have material desire. So it works, these three work all for the karmis and for the devotees. Does that make sense? So that's why in these explanations it works in both ways. But the wording is done more generically, so it's open that others can appreciate. Right? Now, if it only is just in the terms, let's say, like of nectar devotion, then it won't be so broad. It'll just be considered, oh, that's just for us. Right? But this other, using these other methods of how do I say, presentation, then it makes it wider. Right? So then the Purana will use this wider, because it has a wider audience. The Purana has the most wide audience of any of the Vedic literatures. Mm-hmm. Right? Less people will read the Ayurveda or the Stapana Veda or the Gandharva Veda, right? Or learning the Vedic mantras or astrology, right? Logic, right? Philosophy. But histories, that's got the widest range. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, yeah. Thoughts of becoming one with the Lord or being merged in the Brahma Jyotir can also be exhibitions of kama spirit if they are desires for one's own satisfaction to be free from material desires. Footnote 4. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, moksha kama is mentioned separately in order to cut down people's thought that they are without desire, since they desire liberation, right? Because otherwise, they'll put them in their own category. Yeah, oh, there's those desires, but we're the ones that have no desire. So that's put in there because, just to make sure that they understand, they also have a desire. So when you say, you know, so basically when you say kama, that includes everybody. Mm. Right, so akama is actually means pleasing the Lord. So it means for the devotees and the non-devotees, for anybody, worship of the Lord is the recommended process. Right, because even the akama on the material platform is still kama, because you desire to see people happy, that makes you happy. So that's the point. Well, we see with the gopis, they want to see Krishna happy, but they're not worried if they become happy by that. So it's in another category there. Right? So that's real akama. So the other is that mood, that attitude is there. And so if you talk about lack of personal desire, then these materialists will identify with that. Yes, I'm a social worker. I simply want to see others, you know, benefit and happy. That's how they identify. So there's a particular sincerity there. It's just not as broad, or the understanding is not as deep as it could be. Right, it's just the beginning stage, because it's still dealing with the temporary, and based on one's own temporary identity, rather than on the platform of the soul. Yes? No? Yes. Okay. Or the word can indicate that the person desiring liberation is even more filled with desire than the person desiring material comforts, since it follows directly after the word sarva kama. The word kama itself indicates a desire to destroy suffering and attain happiness. Right? Because that's how kama works. Right? As you get rid of the suffering, then that's called happiness. Those desires are shown to be stronger in the jnanis engaged in destroying the suffering of their samsara and anxious for the experience of happiness of Brahman than the karmis who want to destroy temporary suffering and gain temporary happiness of swarga by worshipping devatas. Right? So it's just like, who has more desire? The guy who wants the tricycle or the guy who wants the Ferrari? Right? You understand? It's greater, but it's presented as if it's not. That's always how it works in the material world. You always present it as something less. The ones with more desire are and they're getting them, are more expert at covering them so they don't look like desire.
Right? They figured out that's the only way to get them.
Yes, you know, they're smart enough. But the devotees are engaged only in giving happiness to their worshipable Lord. The word nishkama is applicable to them. This is understood from their statements. Please tell us how we may constantly remember your lotus feet, though we continue in the cycle of birth and death in this world. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.73.15. Here's the point is, remembering the Lord, that's the happiness. What your situation is, that's not the happiness. Right? It's what you're doing. You know, as we mentioned, you know, you have a bunch of kids, they're outside playing and all that, and then it starts to rain, and then they get even happier, jumping up and down, running around in the mud, you know, like that. It becomes more fun. But someone else is, you know, they're walking down the road, starts to rain, and it's like, you know, what else is going to happen, you know? You know, they look up and go, really? You know, it's just, so that's the problem, is that it's not the situation. It's how you deal with it, how you view it, what you do with it. So the devotees, it's about being connected to the Lord, serving the Lord, so they're not worried about the situation. Right? You know, we worry about the situation because we still value that. That's the mix. When we don't worry about the situation, then it's not a problem. Right? Then it's one situation is more useful than another, right? It's just like, I leave at this time, and, you know, it's a bad time, so therefore the whole activity is very difficult. You know, the results are for Krishna, so it'll be a great difficulty. If I leave after an hour, it's not, I won't have all that problem. Since the results for Krishna, you can get a more focused result. That's the only point. It's not that I care whether it's a problem or not. So if I have an option, I can leave after an hour, I'll do it. But if I don't, I'll leave now, even though I know it'll be difficult. Does that make sense? Yeah, well, others, I'm not doing this because it'll be too difficult. Yes.
So Paramahamsas, they can get a focused result out of any situation?
Paramahamsas, yes. It means there's no situation that's bad. You'll always remember Krishna. You know, it means Prahlad Maharaj being thrown off a cliff. What does he do? He remembers Krishna. They put him in a pot of boiling oil, he remembers Krishna. They get out the big snakes and everything, he remembers Krishna. The elephants remembers Krishna. So it doesn't matter what it is, he's always absorbed in the Lord. So therefore, then, it works. He's happy. Right? But, you know, the demigods, it's about the situation. So here's the Lord sitting in front of him. But because he's in a fearful form, they're worried about, he's taking things away, right? He's removing obstacles. So maybe he'll remove their material desires. Facilities, so they're worried about that. You know, so they can't approach. But Prahlad Maharaj, it doesn't matter. He's worshipping the Lord, so he's coming to the Sringade, fine. You know, it's like, however, it's not that you'll only go out to your friend because he dresses in a particular way. You know, it's like, you know, however he shows up, you know, hey, cool. Does that make sense? Yeah, so you have to be quite good friends.
Yeah, you have to find the right friends.
Yeah, yeah. King Parikit also said as he began his fast, on the other hand, in whatever birth I receive, may I have rati for the unlimited Lord. Excellent association with his devotees, who take shelter of him, and friendship with all living beings. I offer respects to the Brahmana, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.19.16. That attachment to that Lord, that attraction, that attachment to the Lord, if I have that, then it doesn't matter what position I'm in. And if I have excellent association, it means you're able to actually take advantage and associate on that devotional platform. Right? And be friendly with all living entities, because that means you see everyone and everything in connection with the Lord. You can't be friendly if you don't see the connection with the Lord. And I offer my respects to the Brahmins, because it's from the Brahmins that I learn to appreciate these other three. Thoughts of becoming one with the... we went down to... A pure devotee does not want liberation so that he may be relieved from the miseries of life. Even without so-called liberation, A pure devotee is aspirant for the satisfaction of the Lord. Influenced by the Kama spirit, Arjuna declined to fight in the Kurukshetra battlefield because he wanted to save his relatives for his own satisfaction. Right? It's hard to have a victory party after the battle with dead relatives. Right? You know, it doesn't work out so good. Right? But being a pure devotee, he agreed to fight on the instruction of the Lord because he came to his senses and realized that satisfaction of the Lord at the cost of his own satisfaction was his prime duty. Thus he became a kama. That is the perfect stage of perfection, perfected living being. That's why then we saw in the beginning of Bhagavatam that it's taking the akama platform as the beginning. Right? But below akama, then it doesn't work out so good. Right? It's because there's too much distraction. So the naishkarmya, the freed from this material desire, that works well.
Right?
Yes. Udada di, right? So this idea of going back, Prabhupada talks about going back to Godhead, that's because then there you can do surrender service very nicely, very free. So it's about rendering service, it's not about the situation. We'll look at, oh no, you don't, we don't want to go back to Godhead, or no, we want to stay here. No, but still, but what has that got to do with it? Why wouldn't we want to go back to God? Why would we want to stay here? But it's not that we want to go back to Godhead because we're trying to get out of here. Does that make sense? You know, like that. It's like, why does one want to go to the temple?
Krishna.
Right, because then it's nice. You can very freely serve the Lord. But you can serve the Lord anywhere. But it's that you're going to the temple not because you're trying to get out of being on the street. Right? Oh, you know, oh, here, your temple. You like the temple here? Yeah, it's great. What do you like about it? Oh, I'm not on the street. You know, that's not going to go down so well. Definitely don't try that one with your wife, right? You know? You like being here at home? Yes, yes. Why? Because it's not on the street.
Yes.
That's definitely not going to go down well. Like that. So, the idea is this, it's not about the situation, right? It's about the service. So whether you're here in the spiritual realm, it doesn't matter, you render service. So you're not trying to get out of here, you're not trying to get into there, you're trying to render service. So the point is that's the natural position for one of always absorbed in serving the Lord. But while we're here, we serve also. It's not that, oh, you can only serve once you go back to God. You can serve here. Because it's all the Lord's. It's all His kingdom. Udada di means one who has a broader outlook. Right? Because Prabhupada was mentioning that before. This is the point, is that getting into just only the karma yoga and getting identifying with the jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, or worship of the demigods, and getting identifying with that, that's a narrow vision. Seeing everything in connection with devotional service, and the focus is on devotional service. That's the broader vision. People with desires for material enjoyment worship small demigods, and such intelligence is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita 7:20 as Hrita Jnana, the intelligence of one who has lost his senses. One cannot obtain any result from demigods without getting sanction from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, a person with a broader outlook can see that the ultimate authority is the Lord, even for material benefits. That's why there's not a problem if someone is trying to fulfill material desires, but in connection with Krishna consciousness. You're not using Krishna consciousness for that, but you're taking care of those things. It's not a problem. Right? We don't see in the Vedic society that, you know, the renunciates or the householders are sitting and grumbling about each other. Right? We see in the Bhagavatam when it's talking about the difficulties in the world, it's talking about material life. Right? Which happens to be a lot more exposure in the Grihastha Ashram. But it's not about the Grihastha Ashram because that's the progressive element. What they're talking about is that material connection or attachment, and not seeing the importance of connecting it to the Lord. That's the part. So we see is that's the angle the acharyas take. And everyone, whether an akama or sakama or moksha kama, should worship the Lord with great expedience. This implies that bhakti yoga may be perfectly administered without any mixture of karma and jnana, as the unmixed sunray is very forceful and is therefore called tivra. Similarly, unmixed bhakti yoga... It's interesting, because the music, when the note is sharp, it's called tivra. So it's interesting.
Intensified.
Intensified.
The other one's softened.
Oh, okay. Okay, so sun rays are considered intense.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, very forceful. Okay, yeah, okay. Similarly, unmixed bhakti yoga of hearing, chanting, etc. may be performed by one and all, regardless of inner motive, because it's the most powerful. Srila Sridhar Swami confirms in his commentary, Tivrena means firmly, naturally, and easily. The devotee's desires are automatically fulfilled. This is explained in Mahabharata. Yeah, forceful, because it's interesting, because also the tivra, it's used generally when you're talking about that element of emotion and desire, right? Because when you come into the sunset, then they bring the fourth note is taken into the sharp, because that's generally considered also the time of desire coming and these things like that. It's very scientific. It's not just by chance. The devotee's desires are automatically fulfilled. This is explained in Mahabharata. The devotees enjoy a great festival of service to Lord Vishnu. They serve him and meditate on him, give charity to him, and offer the food in their homes to him. In this way, they attain a result even the demigods headed by Indra cannot attain. Because they have a security. Indra at any point will lose everything. The Supreme Lord himself said to Sri Kardama Muni, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.21.24, "My dear Rishi, O leader of the living entities, for those who serve me in devotion by worshipping me, especially persons like you who have given up everything unto me, there's never any question of frustration." So in other words, everything works out. Because Kardama Muni, he's approached the Lord as a brahmachari who wants to get married, be involved in family life, have the children, so that he can cross over his material desires. So the ultimate goal was bhakti, pure bhakti. But he had these distractions. So being intelligent, he understood this is the method to follow. So the Lord is saying, you will not be frustrated. So that means these will be taken care of, and you'll get to that point of being that full surrender to the Lord. In other words, by worship of Krishna, one not only fulfills one's desires, but he gets the benefit of having performed pure devotional service. The desire is of no consequence. It's just a side effect. Right? You know, nowadays we consider side effects not so good. So the side effect of devotional service is you fulfill your material desires to get liberation.
That speaks volumes of how good the actual bhakti is.
It's
like a transitory state.
Yeah, it's just there, because it means the material desires are always just for a moment, so you're always just passing through them. And liberation is also very short-lived if you're not connecting it to Krishna. Right? So if it's a goal, it's going to be short-lived, because still you're working with eternal time, so there'll be that experience of it moving. Right? Like that.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, whatever desires one may have, one should earnestly, to Vrena, worship Yajita, the Lord. That worship will eventually lead to pure devotional service. That is elaborately taught here. Who are higher, the pure devotees or one who yearns for impersonal liberation? The answer is given in the words, a person full of all material desires, sarvakama, should still worship the personality of Godhead. That is the final conclusion. Right? So therefore again we see this concept of the moksha bodies, they're actually just really gross materialists. Right? You know, I can't control the situation. You know, the materialist is trying to control the situation to enjoy. The jnanis understood, I can't control the situation, therefore I want to become God who controls the situation. Now, who's got more desire here?
Yeah.
You know, that's... So it's interesting how they do that. It's like, you know, have you heard of this yogi? You know, Prabhupada says, never heard of him. What about this one? He's another rascal. The first one was also. Very nicely, just, you know, tastefully done. So, here. Who are higher, the pure devotees or one who yearns for impersonal Brahman? The answer is given. A person full of all material desires should still worship the personality of Godhead.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Srila Jiva Goswami in his Bhakti Sundarbha, Anucheda 98, cites Bhagavatam 2-10 as an evidence that Vishnu Bhakti is the Abhideya of the Vedic scriptures. Jiva Goswami makes clear that demigod worship cannot be counted as the actual Abhideya, for it does not stand alone, nor does it purify the heart of the worshipper, raising him above material desires, as does devotional service of the Lord. Because there's always this thing of distinguishing between what's Abhideya and what's Sambandha. Right?
Yes.
Like that. What's a goal, what's an ultimate goal? Because bhakti then can be maintained. The demigod worship won't be maintained. Once you get to the heavenly planet, you're not going to be worshipping the demigod. Right? You know, you finally make it your Indra. Are you going to be worshipping Indra? Yeah, maybe. Look in the mirror.
Look at
that handsome guy. You know, I mean, you may be doing stuff like that, but otherwise you're not going to.
Serious puja, though.
No, you're not going to be sitting there with a lamp.
In front of the mirror.
Oh, that's another, yeah. But then are you actually the real Indra, or is that the reflection of the Indra, so that's an illusory Indra, so you're going to have questions. In this way, it is shown that devotional service gives life to these various methods by which one attains his desires. Therefore, in all the Vedas it is said, one should perform devotional service. Also, without even performing any other activities, one can simply perform devotional service alone. This is shown in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 2-3-10. Okay, so this is the Anucheda, no? Yeah. A person who has broader intelligence, whether it be full of material desire, without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the personality of Godhead. Right. So, it's that devotional service was in. Devotional service gives life to these various methods. So since it's the one giving life, you can just directly deal with devotional service. Right? You don't have to. You know, put. In Sri Vishnu Purana, Pulaha Muni said, you know, it's just like, let's say you can work with a middleman, or you can go directly to source, as you like. Where do you get the better deal?
Source.
Yeah. So that's the whole point. That's why it's saying, why go through the demigods? You just go directly to the source. In the Sri Vishnu Purana, Pulaha Muni said, without performing any other activities, a person who takes shelter of Lord Narayana automatically attains the four goals of life. Therefore, the results of hearing all the Vedic scriptures is that one comes to understand that he should engage in devotional service to the Lord, who himself confirms this in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.3. By the influence of time, the transcendental sound of Vedic knowledge was lost at the time of annihilation. Therefore, when the subsequent creation took place, I spoke the Vedic knowledge to Brahma, because I myself am the religious principles enunciated in the Vedas. Right? So, you know, the religious principles, we can look at it from the social system, that those principles are Krishna, the inherent nature of all the elements and, you know, manifestations in the world, what their inherent nature is, that's Krishna. You understand? So this idea that we don't have to worry about this, that we're transcendental, we go beyond, then is not important, because then we're rejecting Krishna here.
Mm.
Right? But if one only sees, of course, only sees the form, then that's also a distraction. Mm. Does that make sense? It also is a distraction. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying to deal with, is that we know what is the devotional service. Otherwise, we're dealing with it, but we're dealing with the material element of it. Then that's dealing with material desire along with the other. The other is just, it's just a tool in working with it. It's not that it itself is a goal. It itself is a need. Right? It's not that you're sitting there and you have to cut something. You just gotta cut something. You know? You know, so therefore you go into the kitchen and, you know, cut a sack of potatoes. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's just in the process of cooking, you cut potatoes. Yes. Do you understand?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's the difference.
Yes.
Okay, so these religious principles, it's that the devotee just, this is Krishna, so therefore you deal with it. That's how it works. Whatever you're dealing with, it has a nature. So that nature is Krishna. So you deal with Krishna according to Krishna's direction. Right? It's just natural. Someone has what they like, how they like it. You know, you want your whipped cream on top of the pie or on the side. You know, it's people are, you know, very, and some just don't want it at all. Right? Some only want the whipped cream. You know, so you know, you have these different categories. They're very strict about this. So the whole point is, it's I'm trying to get into that. Now by whipped cream.
Soon it'll be.
Oh, no, another
while.
Half an hour.
Oh.
Okay. I don't even remember. Oh, get into the religious principles. The nature. So Krishna is manifest as all these. Now it's just a matter, if you're dealing with something socially, there's laws there. If you're dealing with the mechanics of it, niti, just practically getting something done, the efficiency of it, still those laws are Krishna. You know, you're dealing on the emotional platform. How the mind works, the laws are Krishna. You're dealing with the intelligence, that laws are Krishna. You're dealing with the identity, the laws are Krishna. Right? So that's the whole point, is that it remains, it doesn't change. Right? It's not that gravity is one thing over here and in America it's different. You know what I'm saying?
They do weigh a lot.
So you're saying because the gravity is greater, so people weigh more? So actually, maybe this is a good point. So the people aren't fat, actually.
No,
it's just they
gravity.
Weigh more.
Yeah.
They're more, it's
yeah.
more. The density is
yeah.
greater,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So that means, like over, let's say, in Thailand or Vietnam, then actually, there's hardly any gravity, so therefore they're so light.
Yeah. This is my theory.
Okay. Yes. That would be a good one. You know, you might bring that up on.
You just have to figure out how to make money on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, that is marketed. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So Krishna reveals these things because he is a religious principle. So the Shastra is defining that. Because he makes the creation, he's already these things. But Brahma won't understand that. So by explaining it to him, the Veda, he understands, then he can create. Because otherwise you'd want to come up with something different. You know, I don't know, there's some story, I've always heard it, I don't show the sources, is that, you know, Krishna made the cow or something, and Brahma, you know, made the cow. Indra wanted to prove that he's, you know, also quite, how you say, you know, qualified. But, you know, when he produced, he ended up with a buffalo. You know, so it wasn't quite as, you know, the same. Mark, you know,
Who made the hippopotamus?
That's another thing.
Can we have it grazing underwater?
Yeah, no, that's a good walk on the bar. Yeah, actually, that's what they're doing. Yeah, you see pictures of them underwater just walking around. That's wild. Okay, we won't get into that. So we're, you know, no offenses to the buffaloes outside of Rome who they make the mozzarella from. But, you know, other than that. Okay. This being so, they who are not very wise worship Lord Vishnu in order to attain the various benefits otherwise attained by the other spiritual processes, beginning with karma yoga. Because of committing offenses, right? So they're worshiping Lord Vishnu to get the things you can get from karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga. That doesn't mean it's more intelligent to do it without worshipping Vishnu. He's just saying it's not as intelligent as worshipping Vishnu directly and getting the benefits of devotional service. Because of committing offenses, these people's worship of the Lord brings them only the fulfillment of these desires and nothing more. In this way, one need only engage in devotional service to fulfill these desires. However, much more than this, devotional service gives the greatest benefits. Srimad Bhagavatam 5:19-27. Right, so that's your question before. Do we get the same from making the endeavor within devotional service or within, you know, one of the other yogas? It says here you get that plus you get more. Right? However, much more than this, the devotional service gives greatest benefit. Right? Because you get that attraction for Krishna. While in the other ones, you only get the temporary benefit. And so all that work, you get nothing eternal out of it. While in devotional service, you get an eternal result out of your endeavor, along with whatever is the temporary, you know, natural result. The Supreme Personality, the Supreme Personality of Godhead fulfills the material desires of a devotee who approaches him with such motives, but he does not bestow benedictions upon the devotee that will cause him to demand more benedictions again. Right? In other words, he'll fulfill it in such a way you don't want it anymore. Not because it's a problem for him, because he's dealing with unlimited living entities and giving them their facilities. So it's because he wants to cultivate the relationship between oneself and the Lord. Right? So he'll fulfill it in a way he removes it. However, the Lord willingly gives the devotee shelter at his own lotus feet, even though such a person does not aspire for it. And that shelter satisfies all his desires. That is the Supreme Personality's special mercy. So, in worshipping the Lord for material desire, the material desire is fulfilled, but in such a way that you won't endeavor for it again. And at the same time, even though you were not specifically endeavoring to develop an attraction for Krishna, that happens. Right? Yes.
I think this is nicely illustrated by the story of Dhruva Maharaj.
Yes. Dhruva Maharaj. Yeah, because seeing the Lord, then he felt, you know, that this, because he wasn't looking for that at all. He just wanted a big kingdom. Yeah. You know, that's all. There was no other motive.
Right.
Yeah. That's a very good point. Yes.
In the last paragraph where it said these people's worship of the Lord brings them only the fulfillment of these desires and nothing more. And nothing more, is that referring to no more material aspirations?
It's basically meaning, see, because as in here is when we're dealing with this, because you can apply this on the devotional platform or not on the devotional platform. So you might have someone who's smarter than the other materialists. He approaches the Supreme Lord for his material desires. But because that's all he's interested in, then he only gets that material desire. That's all the Lord fulfills. Because you don't know there's beyond. Right? But we see here, but for the devotee, he also is the same way, he has material desire, approaches the Lord for it. The Lord fulfills it, but in such a way that he's not going to keep, you know, hey, that was good, and, you know, then ask for something else. You know.
I don't understand what the first part of that relates to, like Dhruva Maharaj or
this person. Well, here in Dhruva Maharaj is that he wanted to obtain the Lord, so that was very much a part of it. It wasn't that he was just worshipping the Lord for the material. He wanted to obtain, because he understood that by obtaining the Lord, then you could get what you wanted. So there's that other aspect is there. So there was that trying to see the Lord, meet the Lord. Because as a kid, you don't think about God's hard to see. And, you know, you tell an adult, you know, you want to, you know, when you can see the Lord, you know, how you say, you get this from the Lord. So he'll think is that I just pray, I'm not going to see the Lord. But a kid, you think you get this from that person. You know, you want a cookie, you go to your mommy, you go face to face. Yeah, interaction. So he as a kid thinks, okay, so you chant this, you see the Lord directly, then you interact. But seeing the Lord, then he lost his interest. You know, because that's, he came in contact with the pure devotee. Right? So Narad Muni, you know, arranged it in such a way. But let's say you're smart, that he's following nicely. Everything. He's following the scripture, but he doesn't have contact with bhakti. So his performance of the worship of the Lord only gives the material result of karma, jnana, yoga. But he does it directly by the Lord. So it's more intelligent than the karmi, but it's not actually that intelligent. Because if you're going to worship the Lord, why not worship him in devotion? These material things will automatically be taken care of. You don't have to separately think of them. Like, if I'm invited to someone's house for lunch, I don't have to, after, you know, I like that. Yeah, you come to the house. Yeah, yeah, great, like that. And then I hang up the phone, and then I think, what? And then I call back. It says, excuse me, but, you know, you're coming for lunch and all that. And, you know, are we going to have a place to sit, you know, for eating and stuff like that? Yeah, yeah, don't worry about it. We got a place. Like, okay, you know, call back. You know, is it, do I get a plate or something, or a, you know, a bowl or like that, you know, like that, or do I have to, you know, just like eat off the floor? Or, you know, you don't have to worry. It's already included. Lunch means all the paraphernalia. Does that make sense? Yeah, so devotional service means these are already included.
So that distinction between just having a material desire fulfilled and approaching the Lord, is that why the adjective two-brainer is used with the intensity or with the affection? Or
yes, then it's there. It's that. But in any case, it's just so Bladmars had that intensity. Well, the Smarta, you know, it could be Vishnu, it could be Ganesh. It's that just in our family line, we worship Vishnu, so that's all that's happening. But you'll see is they have better facility. It's like, yeah, I mean, remember, most all programs we did at Hindus' houses, they were worshiping Vishnu or Ram. Very rare you got invited to a program at those who worship Shiva. Right? And it's not that many who are worshiping Shiva that were all that wealthy in that. There are groups that are like that, but they're smaller groups, they're smaller communities. Well, the communities that worship Vishnu then are much bigger in the way of, you know, being successful and things like that. Yes.
Does that mean that even though you may be worshiping Vishnu as a temporary form, a little bit of devotion, real devotion, might slip through, or
may or may not? It's that you have to still use the process of bhakti. You have to be sincere, not desire the results. You know, be focused on the Lord when you offer the lamp. Start from his feet, come up. You have to do all the things you would do in bhakti, but you don't have bhakti. So therefore, you just get that. If at any point there is some sincerity, then you'll come in contact with the pure devotee. So Dhrumars wanted to know the Supreme Lord. So there's a sincerity. Therefore, Krishna put him in contact with Narad Muni. Like that. You know, because he didn't really know. He wasn't experienced. But his natural thought was, I want to meet this person. Yes.
I think it's mentioned in the fourth canto that any karma kind of worship, Vishnu given the main place anyway.
Yes.
So this is by performance of those jagyas and everything, and people just accumulate piety.
Yes, yes. But it won't turn into bhakti sukriti. I mean, it becomes, one is able to, yeah, let's say, they keep bringing one in contact with the Lord and his devotees, but whether you take advantage of it is another thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you have to, any demigod, you do have to worship Vishnu.
Yeah.
Like that. But, yeah. Because otherwise, you wouldn't be able to get any benefit from demigod worship, since they're basically taken as one entity. You know, it means demigod worship is one thing, and there's 33 million of them. So real demigod worship would be to worship all 33 million demigods. Otherwise, why this one? Why not me? You know, and you wouldn't want that. You know, it's because it might not work out so good. You know what I'm saying?
Can't blink your eyes.
Yeah, you know, something like that. You know, the tear ducts stop working, or something like that. You know, it's like. This verse means, quote, he certainly fulfills the request of the human beings who ask him, end quote. He never gives something that will lead one astray. In that sense, he is not always Artha-dha, the bestower of benedictions. He only gives benedictions that, once given, the receiver does not return. That is the meaning. This means that because of being unfulfilled, when the happiness obtained in that benediction wanes, the person returns and asks for another benediction. This is described in the words Srimad Bhagavatam 9.19.14. As supplying butter to a fire does not diminish the fire, but instead increases it more and more, the endeavor to stop lusty desires by continual enjoyment can never be successful. In fact, one must voluntarily cease from material desires. You have to, at one point, just give it up, right? But the point is when it's in connection with the Lord, you're getting that taste in that side, you're getting purified, so knowledge and detachment come. So at one point, you can just give it up. But you actually just have to, at one point, just say, I'm not doing this. Right? Does that make sense? So, by being in contact with the Lord, by the Lord's grace, one has that ability, develops the ability to do that, but you still have to do it. Right? You still have to give up. The supremely merciful Lord, understanding this, gives his lotus feet, which satisfies all devotees' desires to the devotees, who, because they do not know the sweetness present in his lotus feet, do not desire to attain them. He is like a mother who takes from her son's mouth the clay he was eating and gives him a candy instead. Right? Because he's quite cool with the mud. Right? That is the meaning.
Yes. Just go back to that. At one point you have to voluntarily give it up.
Yes.
Sometimes we talk about that the process of bhakti automatically things happen, but there's obviously a sequence you have to go through the process. So
yes, means it's automatically because you will come to the point where you don't see the importance, so therefore you can just give it up.
It's just like it no longer interests you anymore.
Yeah. And but you still, when it comes up, there's no interest. Because the idea is, because you're focused on the Lord, that's why you're not worried about it. That's why you're not interested. Because otherwise, then the difficulty comes is that if you're not giving it up, then how can we say that you're focused on the Lord? It's just you haven't come across it. You know what I'm saying?
It's easy to express a vow of poverty if you don't have anything.
Yes, like that. But the point is there has to be that commitment to it. So it's because we're a person, there has to be focus, there has to be commitment for any endeavor to be successful. Right? So that has to be. Later in this at the top of 11?
Yeah, this is then the next stage.
Okay. Later in the same Anucheda, Jiva Goswami again cites Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.10 to argue that worship of the demigods is automatically included in worship of the Supreme Lord. All desires to attain certain results can be employed in devotional service, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.10 explains. A person who has broader intelligence, whether it be full of all desires, without any material desires, or desiring liberation, must, by all means, worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. Right? So now he's showing connections. So this is broader intelligence. Lesser intelligence is you're worshiping the Lord, but only getting the material results. So broader means worshipping the Lord, getting devotional results, but you may be getting the material results as well. Mm-hmm. Right? But the broadest is you're only worshipping the Lord. You're not worried about the material results. Right? Means for yourself. Right? By serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one automatically satisfies all the demigods. This is confirmed by the following words, Srimad Bhagavatam 4.31.4.14. As pouring water on the root of a tree energizes the trunk, branches, twigs, and everything else, and as applying food to the stomach enlivens the senses and limbs of the body, simply worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead through devotional service automatically satisfies the demigods who are parts of that Supreme Personality. Also in the Skanda Purana, in a conversation between Brahma and Narada, it is said, when the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, who carries in his hands a conch shell, wheel, club, and lotus flower, is worshipped, certainly all of the demigods are worshipped automatically, because Hari, the Personality of Godhead, is all-pervading. Right? They're worshipped automatically because they're just parts and parcels of him. So if you're worshipping him, you're already worshipping his arms. So the demigods are already taken care of. They're just potencies of the Lord. Yes?
So Maharaj, do you know if the demigods are aware about that fact?
Means that, you know, in better moments they are, definitely. We see, because the prayers they offer and that, they understand this fully. But just because of material desire, sometimes they forget. Right? Because basically we're taking it as a devotee, one generally remembers the Lord, occasionally he really forgets. But generally one remembers. So the demigods are the same. You know, generally they're always understanding, doing their duties, remembering the Lord. But it's not necessarily that it's at all times, it's not stable. Right? That's why the demigods.
Neophyte.
Yes, because they're neophytes. So that position of stability in devotional service hasn't come yet. All the cases can be used in Krishna's service. And all become benefited. Therefore, one who directly, subject the verb, engages in devotional service, one who donates what he offers, objects, cows or various things, so they may provide something to offer the Lord, one whom instrumental case, something is given, so that gift may be pleasing to the Lord, one who takes milk and other things from cows or other living entities to offer food to the Lord, and one in whose country or family devotional service is performed, all attain the perfection of engagements in devotional service. This is seen in the statements of the Puranas, right? So why use the cases? Why use a grammatical explanation? Because everything that human experience, you know, it's human need, desire, interest, all these things can be expressed, right, through language. That means language has to be able to cover every aspect of human need. That makes sense?
Yes.
So that means all the different needs can be expressed by the grammar. That means the grammar can show all the connection to the Lord. So by showing that, that means all aspects of whatever human would like to discuss or do can be connected to the Lord. Does that make sense? So this is something that if one has that grammatical kind of exposure, experience, it makes some sense. Right? Yes.
It's said that if one is trained in Sanskrit grammar or Sanskrit understanding, then it automatically contains the ability to think more broadly.
Yes, because then you're seeing how the different things connect to each other. So that means you will make connections between people that otherwise you don't make. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So it's just, it's a different perspective. It's that's the... This is seen in the statements of the Puranas. In this way, an example has been given for each of the cases employed in Sanskrit grammar. It's just the first ones have been pointed out, but the others are. Because, it's you know, devotional service is coming from that place. So that means it's the, what do you call it, ablative. You know, so you have all these different things that it's coming from. So
it's not being the locative.
Yes, the locative is coming from there or started there. Sorry?
It might have been from the cows or uplifting it.
Okay, from the cows and all that. Yeah, and then the place is the locative.
In whose country or family.
Yeah, so it means, in other words, all the things, are they can all be connected. That means there's nothing that can't be. Right? Because otherwise, if the Lord's created everything, what's outside of that? So this idea is something can't be engaged in the Lord, service of the Lord. So then, where does that come from? That means we have a separate conception or something?
Is it because we're not thinking about the activity? That if that the sinful is actually a thing and an activity combined that doesn't fit, and we don't understand?
Yeah. The point is the activity gives the results. It's not whether you're sinful or not. You know what I'm saying? You know, the super pious person goes up to the machine and puts the coin in the machine, and the super sinful guy goes up and puts the coin in the machine. So, of course, the pious person gets what he wants from the machine, and the impious person's machine absolutely refuses. You know, in fact, you know, keeps the coin and then sends it to the police station.
Yes.
You know, with its fingerprints on it.
Electrocutes the person. Electrocutes the person.
Okay, yeah. When he sticks his hand, he gets the thing, you know, grabs it, you know, calls the police. In this way, an example has been given for each of the cases employed in Sanskrit grammar. Thus, it is proven that devotional service should be performed everywhere and in all circumstances. Sarvatra, as explained in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.36. A person who is searching after the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this, in all circumstances, in all space and time, both directly and indirectly. So we've heard about, you know, directly means the direct activities of devotional service. Indirectly means connecting all the situations you have to the Lord. So at all time, place, and circumstances, it must be done.
Yes.
Devotional service is eternally manifest. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.36 in the word sarvada, always. Devotional service is manifested at the beginning of the universe's creation. That is confirmed in the following words, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.3, where the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself says, by the influence of time, the transcendental sound of Vedic knowledge was lost at the time of annihilation. Therefore, when the subsequent creation took place, I spoke the Vedic knowledge to Brahma, because I myself am the religious principles enunciated in the Vedas. So the point is the Vedas are describing devotional service and worship of the Lord. Therefore, devotional service was there at the beginning. Right? Because otherwise, why mention I am the religious principles? Right? The meaning of directly and indirectly from Bhagavatam 2.9.36 is cited above. It's explained in Bhaktisandarbha Anucheda 165. That everyone should engage in devotional service and do nothing else is explained in the following words, where the Lord himself says, Bhagavad Gita 9.22.23, but those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kunti, but they do so in a wrong way, because they don't know. These two verses confirm the statement of Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.36 that one should serve the Lord both directly and indirectly. Direct means just worship Krishna. Indirect means don't worship anyone else but Krishna. Yeah. Says, direct means just worship Krishna. Indirect means don't worship anyone else but Krishna. So that's what the element of the universal form is. What you would consider something else other than Krishna, you're seeing it as Krishna. So therefore, you're only worshipping Krishna. One should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead and no one else. That is the definition of devotional service. Srila Sukadeva Goswami summarizes the instructions he gave so far in this chapter in verses 11 and 12. First, in verse 11, he points out that even the demigod worshippers attain the highest perfectional benediction, spontaneous attraction, unflinchingly fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if they associate with a Mahabhagavan, a devotee fixed in the exclusive service of the Lord. Right, so this association is the most important. In other words, the demigods are not to be disrespected, but they should not be worshipped separately. In this purport to verse 11, Srila Prabhupada writes, apart from the gross materialists who care very little either for God or for the demigods, the Vedas recommend worship of different demigods for different benefits. And so the demigods are neither false nor imaginary. Okay, so we'll stop here.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
Jai
Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki